I'll tell you what, if there's somebody who would ever write a song about cheese, it would be Jason Cans. And he's on the line with us. First thoughts, best 5 minutes of the day. Good morning.
Good morning. I think there should probably be an entire album about cheese.
Well, here's the deal. Today is Cheese Lovers Day. So it's not just Inauguration Day, it's Cheese Lovers Day.
Yeah, well, there used to be that Dairy Council commercial about cheese, glorious cheese.
Uh-huh.
And I think that should probably get more regular airplay than what it does. So
you've been on the keto diet, the plan, the lifestyle for a while now.
Yep.
Cheese and meat, some of your staples.
Yep.
And so talk about your love of cheese.
Well, you know, I cheese is one of those things that we can eat when we're on a keto diet. We're supposed to limit it to 4 ounces a day, which doesn't seem like it should be that difficult. But I love cheese. I think I always have. I grew up with a cheese factory right in my backyard. And so fresh cheese curds were available every day. And even now, the availability of cheese that they have at Woodman's is rather stunning. And I've often wondered if I could just live on cheese alone, you know, get rid of all the rest of the stuff and just focus on the various types of cheese.
There's a song back in the day from Steve Green, God and God Alone. And so I'm just thinking of...
Well, you know, we've toyed with that question sometimes. If you had to live on one food for your entire life, I always said pizza would be really the way to go because there's such a variety. But there are really a variety of cheeses out there too. So
your favorite? I said Peggy's sharp cheddar and Swiss. I'm not picky. I typically get Colby, but Swiss is certainly great.
Yeah, Colby is my go-to. I love Colby. I agree with Peggy. I like sharp cheddar. But that's, again, not something that one can do all the time. At least I can't. I think it's But, yeah, I like them all. I really, that's not true. I like many of them that I've tried. I've not tried anything like Limburger or anything like that. So,
Transitioning out of cheese. Yesterday we got word that, you know, you and I have a bond in Christ, but in Larry Crabb. And we won't recount that, but it's just true. And even on the air, where we did those many Crabb conversations covering a variety of books. But the word that at age 76 and a half, he's going to basically transition away from doing the in-person teaching for his schools of spiritual direction. His health has continued to decline. He's still going to do as much as he can online, but... And he did give kind of a live webinar update for some of his big fans yesterday, but it's a tough pill to swallow, right?
It is. Again, I think the relationship that you and I have, I think, is certainly built on more than Larry Crabb, but he was a huge part of our initial development of our friendship, I think. Again, we share a lot of his ideas. I think we both count him as a mentor, and as a friend. And so I think hearing that and reading that has been challenging. You know, it's one of those things where I'm certain at some point he will die. But it's not something that I ever really want to think about.
Yeah.
I want him just to keep writing books, for the rest of my life. And, that's just not going to happen.
But let's close with this though, as we, again, continue to, you wrote this book, you wrote the best, the most important chapter, which is a summary of all of his books, and then various other contributors, including him. And there was a whole gathering around this in Houston that we both had to attend, Living in the Larger Story. And I'd encourage people to get that. We'll tell them at the end how they can. But yesterday he talked about, over these last 20 years, he'd had New Way Ministries, and now it's going to morph into Larger Story, which his son is heading up. It's really meant to be a legacy ministry carrying forward his work. But this emphasis, Jason, as we close, on relational theology or spiritual theology, and for people who are like, what are you talking about? Can you talk about that and why it's so important to him?
Yeah, so Larry is deeply formed by the importance of the Trinity. You know, the whole Bible is about relationship, and you and I both agree with him on that. And so everything that we think about in terms of how we understand Scripture, about how we understand living in the world, is really driven by this idea that God is an eternally existent community. You know, there's this constant outpouring of love, and what we're called to do is to be relational, to really press into developing lives of love. As challenging as that is, that's really our highest calling as Christians: love God, love others, love self. And so I think that's really, if you want to get a handle on that, his books are a great place to understand what does living relationally look like.
Where would you say, again, as somebody who summed up all of his books for this amazing chapter in Living in the Larger Story, I mean, would you start with Inside Out, or would you jump ahead to Connecting, or where?
You know, Connecting is really, really good. I think it's really accessible. One of my favorites is Living in a True Spiritual Community. I think that really lays out the steps that he talks about with this idea of spiritual theology, which could be another complete conversation. But again, I think that's really that deep relational piece there, too.
There again. Again, it's just kind of this realization that the Trinity has been relational from eternity past. That's a big deal. And again, this term of Trinitarian relating. So, all right. And that's what really, to be honest, as we say goodbye this morning, is that this used to be me reading a little bit of a devotion every morning. Now, the idea here is there's relationship that kind of is breathed into the folks who are listening. And we had such great response from folks, and we're so grateful. And it's much more than just reading a Devo every day. So thank you.
Absolutely.
People get to hear us go off about cheese for a few minutes. So there we are. All right, there we go. Jason Kanz. Caleb, some veterinarians were asked to share some of their strangest pet names they've ever encountered.
And here's the thing. I feel like as a vet, you just kind of bite your tongue and don't say anything. Because, again, these people are paying for your services and you want them to keep on coming back. So just like, that's their name. All right.
So again, no judgment here.
Not at all.
Naming a child, naming a pet is a big deal. Now, naming a pet's not as big a deal as naming a human being.
What about when you let the child name the pet? Maybe that's where some of these issues arise.
God let Adam name the animals, right?
So
here we go. A woman apparently had a cat named Face. The woman said it was because the cat had a beautiful face.
So you don't think of a synonym for beautiful. It's just Face.
Come here, Face.
You with the face. There was a dog named Dog. Guess what? Dog was named by a 3-year-old. Very literal 3-year-old.
You know, I mean, it's
can have
possible.
A black and white view of the world.
Come here, dog. Okay. Another reason that you should let your toddlers name pets, one vet saw a dog named Refrigerator.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sure. Refrigerator. So, again, vets were asked to share strange pet names. There was a dog named Dump Truck.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. That's unique.
Yes.
Someone named their cat Salad.
Oh.
That's different.
Hopefully there weren't any underlying notions about that. There was a cat named Shoe, one veterinarian said.
Huh. Okay.
Cat named Shoe.
This one is funny, actually. There was a cat named Feline Dion.
There you go.
Feline Dion.
Feline Dion is how it's spelled, and I choose to pronounce it Feline Dion, yes.
Yeah, thinking like Celine Dion. Anyhow, those are some. Anyhow, if you have some strange pet names, we'd like to hear them. 396-1670, 396-1670.
Good morning. Regarding unique dog names, when I first bought my home in 1990, we got a cute little beagle puppy, and I let my three daughters pick her name. They were huge fans of the Dead Poets Society movie, so her name was Carpe Diem. But due to the girls also having responsibility for keeping the driveway clear, she ended up more often than not being called Poops. Thank you. Have a blessed day. Bye.
When my kids were little, they went to the park and they found this little kitten that was black, and they brought it home and they asked if they could keep it. And I said, yes, you can. What do you want to name it? And they named it Kitty Cat.
Very literal. Our friend John from Ladysmith, we're asking on the WIB Wake Up Show at 715-396-1670, the WIB listener line, unique pet names. And a lot of times maybe those came from your kids giving that moniker to your pet.
I think one observation, having lived in Africa for a couple of years, if I recall, over there, people are like, you don't give like a human. Like over here, I mean, Max is a great name. Max Lucado, great author, pastor, one of the best. But there are a lot of dogs, it seems like, that are named Max.
Yeah.
And so over in Africa, it's like, don't put human names on a dog. So that's kind of one of the deals.
One of the
differences.
Yeah. Well, it's starting to become our Wednesday morning tradition here in the WIB Wake Up Show. What's something that bugs you just a little bit, a pet peeve? And then we say, let's look at it in more of a humorous fashion. We call it Pet Peeves Put to Music. And so this comes from my partner in crime sitting right across the desk here this morning. Havel mentioned something, and I actually didn't have any ideas for today's pet peeve and thought I'd just recycle one from days past. But then you inspired me, my friend.
Well, yesterday morning we were talking about, for men and women, least favorite household chores. And at the end, I kind of tagged down. In fact, I think we've got the audio.
See, now I was like, what about cleaning up the dog dirt in the backyard?
Oh.
That we're getting,
nope,
that's
nope,
not a household
nope,
chore.
Don't want to do that.
It's not popular either. Oh, and I've got something that's a pet peeve. Other people who don't clean up their dog dirt in your yard or on public property, the song is brewing.
All right, so again, we didn't have any new pet peeves from you at 715-396-1670, so I thought, well, you know what? That seems like fitting subject matter for a song. So without further ado, here's Havo's pet peeve song, Pet Peeves Put to Music, here on WIB Radio. Havo really hates it more than he can express when doggies leave some doo-doo and you don't clean up their mess. Don't leave those dog logs lying or he'll really vent his spleen. Our parks and public sidewalks are much better when they're clean.
Oh, come on. What left this? A dinosaur?
Don't you dare keep walking when your pup leaves a pile. Just please clean up their business and you'll leave us with a smile. Feces isn't fun, so when it comes to number two, it's better in your bag than on the bottom of my shoe.
Bottom of my shoe.
There we go. Just for you, my friend.
That was fantastic. That's your best one I've heard.
Here's the thing. When
memory.
I can get Havel to laugh out loud in the studio, I know it's like a virtual pat on the back. So thank you.
Oh, that was really good. I can't wait to hear it again. Well, women continue to make progress in terms of their occupational involvement and mainstreaming. And the big announcement coming yesterday, Sarah Thomas to become the first female to officiate a Super Bowl coming up in Tampa in a couple weeks.
Yes. Now, Sarah has been a mainstay on NFL sidelines as an official. I believe side judge is primarily where she's at. And, she's worked her way up the ranks. And, again, this is something where, as an official, I mean, you have to pay your dues and be graded out very highly to even get playoff games, much less the Super Bowl. So congratulations to Sarah. This is very groundbreaking.
Right, yeah. She'll serve as the game's down judge. She's 47 years old from Pascagoula, Mississippi, and she's served in this position the last 4 years. So
very cool. Where are my ladies at who love football? Because, again, sometimes – I think in maybe our archaic way, we think, oh, yeah, just the guys love it and the guys play. Well, no, there are some very, very knowledgeable
Chris Collinsworth gotten some
fans.
Hot water, right? Color analyst for NBC. One of the games where he made some reference where he was surprised into where they were, Pittsburgh or somewhere, that these women knew so much about football. And I think that day is gone. At the same time, the NFL always looking. They had one of the opening round of the playoffs they were showing on Nickelodeon, right? So they're always looking to expand.
That was really interesting, again, to kind of make it as kid-friendly as possible. And
did you see one of the things they had Sean Payton, the Saints coach, get all this goo on him?
Yeah. I thought that was very creative.
Slime, so, I guess it was.
Yeah. Let's make things a little bit more fun and family-friendly. That's fantastic. And I do hope that certain members of the Green and Gold are there to congratulate Ms. Thomas in person.
Yes.
On working her
go
first
pack,
ever
go.
Super Bowl.
Yes.
If you want to win the game, you got to take good aim and get the most marbles with your hippo. Playing hungry, hungry hippos.
Hey!
Hungry, hungry hippos.
Hooray!
Hungry, hungry hippos is the name of the game.
We had hungry, hungry hippos. We also had frog soccer, which sounded very similar.
The problem in Colombia, the nation of Colombia, is they've got some hungry hippos. Here's the deal. You might say hippos. Colombia, I thought they're, you know, like in Africa. Pablo Escobar's hippos are taking over the marshlands of Colombia, and scientists say they need to face the same fate as their late owner before they become impossible to control. The so-called cocaine hippos were illegally imported to the country by this notorious drug lord who was shot dead by authorities, you know, almost 30 years ago. But the rapidly breeding hippos have grown to become the largest invasive species on the planet.
Here's the thing. It's annoying when you have termites or, you know, lice in the hair or whatever, but this invasive species, it's not like just some sort of little frog where it's like, oh, man, we've got the Colombian tree frog in America. We don't want it here. It's hippos.
Hippos, right. And they could reach dangerous numbers in the next 20 years. One ecologist says nobody likes the idea of shooting a hippo, but we have to accept that no other strategy is going to work.
I know from my extensive research with Disney Nature channels that hippos are massive and their mouths can open like 4 feet wide, and you do not want to make one angry.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
If on along the theme of today's show, if you had a hippo as a pet, what would you name it?
Hungry Hungry?
Yeah. When Escobar was killed, authorities took control of his 7,000-acre estate, including a personal zoo. While most of the animals found homes at zoos elsewhere, four of them escaped.
Renegade hippos.
This sounds like a movie. With no real predators, there are anywhere between 80 and 100 descendants of Escobar's former pets terrorizing the nation of Colombia's lakes and rivers.
And this is what's even more interesting. So they're terrorized by 80 to 100. Scientists have projected the hippo population in the country of Colombia could surge to 1,500 by 2024.
In the next 4 years, in the Biden administration.
So it's like, okay, so if 100 is a problem, 1,500?
I know. This is like exponents, right?
They're staging a coup. They're going to be in charge.
This needs dealing with.